You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of the Pine Tar Podcast. This is Clint Scholes. This is our last edition of the off season. Going into as spring training, we'll be starting on Thursday, I think. Right, David?
That is correct. Denny Matthews on the call.
Yeah, so we'll get some. They actually have a game. Is there a game Wednesday with the Rangers?
No, first game is Thursday.
Okay. All right, that's the first unofficial game? Or that's the first official
game? That's a charity game, but I think it counts in the Cactus League standings. Which,
oh, does it?
I mean, let's be real. Cactus League for life.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're the defending champs.
Right.
You know, we got to keep our crown. We've got to. We all know how important these games are in the spring, and as evidence of Johnny Giavitella's huge days the other day in the inter-squad game.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure he's opening some eyes and will be earning a roster spot any day now.
I imagine he'll. I think they might send Infante down.
Yeah, I think that's their option. So, no, but obviously nothing's been going on. Nothing's been changing in the world of baseball, in Royals world at least. Some changes to some other teams like the Orioles with a couple big signings this past week, but not much in the Royals world.
No.
No, and we don't expect many changes. So we're going to just entertain you during this podcast with different tidbits, with emails, with Jeffrey Flanagan of Fox Sports Kansas City, and just kind of breaking down what we expect right before Mr. Lesky lands in Arizona come next week.
Yeah, I will be there March 5th. I'm going to try to hit the game that day, but as we talked about off air, they're actually playing the Diamondbacks, which if you've ever been to spring training and you try to go to a Royals versus Diamondbacks game, you realize it's very difficult to find tickets because that is the hometown team. So I might not be able to get to that game, but I'll be there the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th.
Yeah, so hopefully we get some – hopefully you can snag a couple interviews while you're down there, like we said. And Sure. Hopefully you get to see plenty of Royals W's also.
Yeah, last year the Royals were, I believe, 11-0 before I got there, and they lost their first game with me in attendance. So
yes, I remember. We all – it was blame Lesky.
Yeah, yeah.
Hashtag blame Lesky.
That was a good time. I do feel responsible for giving up the 12 runs that day against the Mariners.
So see, your photographic memory, you know exactly right when how many runs they gave up and all that. That's good.
I have a real problem. I think we know that. That might not be accurate. It probably is though.
It's probably close, and I'm sure it's really close. But so what do we want to get to first, Dave? Do we want to talk about do we want to hit the mailbag, or do you want to talk about our warning to the fans?
Let's go to the mailbag first, because it'll kind of lead to a talk about warning and pleading and all that good stuff. We got a nice message from our fan Nate Cook. And he asks us if we see any surprises making the roster out of spring training. I'll take it real quick first, Clint, and my answer is no.
I think that's great analysis on your part. I'd have to agree. I agree 110%. There won't be. I think the biggest surprise.
Whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
You cannot go past 100%.
I think the biggest surprise is kind of the one that's already been hinted at, and that there won't be a utility infielder breaking with the squad.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Jeffrey Flanagan of Fox Sports Kansas City about that coming up in a little bit and see what he has to say. So, yeah, I think the biggest surprise to me is if a guy like Carlos Peguero makes the roster, which I don't think will happen. I just don't see a fit. So, yeah.
The biggest surprise that could possibly happen is in the bullpen. And those aren't that big a surprise. Like, if they did decide to leave to put Danny Duffy in the bullpen, and that would probably push back somebody like maybe Lewis Coleman or somebody who's kind of deserving, you know. But that would,
yeah, you know, Josh Vernier, Royals insider for 610 Sports on Twitter today, kind of alluded to the fact that he doesn't necessarily see Hochaver getting traded or anything, but it could happen, and they're a little bit concerned about injuries right now, and so they haven't done it yet. So I guess if a guy like Hochaver got traded, that would open it up for potentially a guy like Michael Marriott to make the roster as the seventh man in the bullpen. But you're right. I just don't see a whole lot of possibilities other than the few guys we've talked about who are the seven or eight guys in contention for those final five spots.
Yeah, I don't see any way how an outsider breaks with the squad that we haven't already seen plenty of, like, you know, and that Jimmy, how do you even pronounce his last name, Paredes or?
Oh, Paredes, I believe.
Paredes, I mean.
Truthfully, I haven't even taken the time to figure out how to pronounce his name.
No, because he's not going to break the team, you know, and Brad Penny's not going to find a way into the rotation, and so these possible outsiders, they just don't exist.
Yeah, which, and a lot of things can happen.
A trade could happen. That would be the big news, I think.
Yeah, and a guy like Samardzija is apparently back on the trade market. I don't see it happening, but I guess that could be something. But to answer your question, Nate, no.
To kind of, and we didn't talk about this, Dave, but bringing up Jeff Samardzija, I mean, the Royals don't even just seem like a fit because they seem so high on Kyle Zimmer that I don't think they could get a trade done for somebody like him without parting with Kyle.
No, I don't think so. And I think the Cubs are asking for quite a bit, as they should be. They don't have to trade him right now, so why not ask for the moon? Yeah, you're right. I don't see much of a fit at this point. I think I just don't see it right now. I think in a year you could see a fit for a guy like Samardzija, but at that point, if he's not traded by then, he'll only have a year left, and he won't be worth what they're asking him.
Yeah, and the Royals might have answers to all their questions prior to that. Obviously, it's just inter-squad games. Was there anything that surprised you in those two games? I mean, nothing.
Yeah, the outrage against people tweeting play-by-play.
Yeah.
That surprised me. Because, you know, it's not – yeah, it's an inter-squad game. It means literally nothing. I mean, when you have a game – where the manager says, you've thrown too many pitches, the top of the first is over. When that happens, it's obviously unimportant. But, I mean, come on, it's Twitter. Tweet what you want, read what you want, don't read what you don't want. That, to me, and that should tell you how much stock I put into these inter-squad games, because that's what surprised me the most.
And, well, what was funny is it was journalists doing it. Mellinger and Rustin Dodd, who... You know, I tweeted back to Rustin, didn't you tweet some KU practice game or summer squad game?
I saw that. That was good.
Yeah, and he's like, well, yes, and that was the greatest regret of my life, is what his tweet back was. But, yeah, we're fans. And I don't think McCullough likes doing it. You could tell he was kind of, I don't really like to do this. And he was taking a lot of crap, I think, behind the scenes from his star, you know, buddies. But me and the other baseball nerds, we want to know.
Well, and here's the thing. If they randomly had an off day in spring training, which they will, I don't know the schedule exactly. But if they decided to play an inter-squad game, we'd be like, come on, guys, you don't need to tweet that. It was the first action of the year. We all wanted to see stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and I think it's neat to see the players go up against each other. And obviously I'm not there, but I would love to see that. That's just as interesting as a Royals game in March versus the Brewers.
I agree. And
because it's these guys never compete against each other. And when I was a kid growing up, one of the most interesting things I got to see living here in Omaha was when the Royals would come down and play the AAA team.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't do that anymore. And the reason that was neat was just because you got to see these guys compete against their brother and against their teammates, and I think that's cool.
I agree, and I think the least surprising thing of the last couple days is that Mike Moustakas popped out to third.
That was like, I was just waiting for the first pop up to third. That's like, you know, it's the groundhog.
I think I had the first response to that, just for the record, of Royals Twitter. So I guess I'm the quickest with my keyboard of Royals Twitter this year so far.
You had it auto programmed already. You were just waiting for every.
I actually knew where Moustakas was hitting, and I had a tweet set up in Hootsuite assuming he would pop out to third.
Nice.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about spring training real quick before we get to Jeffrey Flanagan. And just kind of a warning, and I'll probably write an article about this because I do every year. It's just fun. When you're looking at stats and when you're looking in mid-March about guys who could make the team and guys who are making an impression, and you're looking on the Royals.com stats page, my advice to you, and I think Clint would agree with this, is don't.
Yes, pretty much. I mean, just don't. There's nothing to see here.
Right. Here's the thing. We talk a lot about stats versus scouts and – you know, what's right, what's the best way to go about it. And there is no right answer. But in spring training, to me, it leans all toward the scout side because the air in Arizona is thin. The wind can gust at times. A lazy fly ball to left can become a 430-foot home run in no time. On top of that, there's the usual spring training caveats that sometimes pitchers are working on things and they're only throwing fastballs. I mean, remember that game Zach Greinke threw back in 05, I think, when he threw like 37 straight fastballs and he just got pummeled? Mm. Well, I think it was against the Brewers, and I don't know why that's in my head. It might be wrong, but if it's right, good for me. I feel like whoever they were playing just lit up the stat sheet, and you're looking at their line for spring training, and you go, well, this guy had four home runs in the first 2 weeks. Well, yeah, because he faced a guy throwing all fastballs and hit three of them. So it's just a recommendation.
We've seen Mike Moustakas win the batting crown last year.
No, he didn't win the batting crown last year. I got the stats up in front of me, but I don't know. Have you ever heard of Chris Getz?
How many times did he go deep?
Well, Chris Getz only hit the one home run. Somehow he's only able to hit one home run. But he hit 450 with a 600 slugging percentage in spring training.
So, that's 600. That's solid.
Yeah. Amazingly, he still only had a 150 ISO. But, yeah, I mean, the guy hit 450 in spring training. Willie Taveras, perennial all-star, of course, hit 406 with a 441 on base percentage. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And you look at teams too, wins and losses. I mean, the Royals went 25-7 in the Cactus League, which was great, and it led to an 86 win season, which was fine. But the second place team in the Cactus League and the team with the third best record in all of baseball in spring training was the Seattle Mariners. And you may recall, you may not, but you may recall that during the regular season they went a cool 71-91.
Yeah, it seems like I don't know. It seems like there's been quite a few good springs of late in Kansas City, as far as win loss record.
Sure,
it just seems that way.
Well, the 2012 Royals weren't quite as good. They were just 16-16. The 2011 Royals, I believe, tied for the Cactus League lead. Crown.
What did Hosmer hit in that 2012? For some reason, I want to say he killed it in spring.
Yeah, in spring 2012, Hosmer was just absolutely on fire, and I remember he started the season on fire too. Hosmer hit 398 with a 453 slugging percentage, or 453 on base percentage, and a 675 slugging percentage with 29 RBI in spring training.
Yeah, and that that translated over to a cool .232 batting average with a .304 right. on base percentage.
Well, and yeah, and you look at the 2012, and some guys it does lead to something, but Escobar hit a strong .318 in spring training in 2012, and it's just what the thing to look for, and it's kind of hard if you're not there, I think MLB Network showing like 6 or 7 Royals games throughout the spring. The schedule's been released. The thing to look for is how they're swinging. Last year, for example, David Lowe had a really good spring numbers-wise. But even if he hadn't, I don't know if you remember, but he hit everything on the nose. If there were advanced metrics in spring training, which I'm sure there are, I just don't know where they are, I guarantee you his line drive percentage would have been up over 30%. It was just bullet after bullet after bullet. And the funny thing is, the other guy I saw in spring training when I was down there and watching games on television, who I was just insanely impressed by, was Cole Calhoun of the Angels. And a lot of people were giving me crap because I kept talking up these two left-handed outfielders who just didn't have much in the way of tools, and all Calhoun did was put up a .282, .347, .462 line in 220 plate appearances. I'm not saying I'm a talent guru or anything, but sometimes you see a guy and you think, okay, he's going to have a nice season. David Lowe was that guy, and he put together a nice season for the Royals. And there's other things to look for. There's pitch recognition. You can see guys who are just seeing the ball well. And on the mound, you see a guy who's commanding the strike zone, keeping the ball where he wants it. Maybe the results aren't there because, yeah, you give up a lazy fly ball to left everywhere else is a home run in Arizona sometimes. So just take off your analytics, stats, statistical hat when you're watching spring training games and watch the players. And I know that sounds weird coming from me. I'm a big stats guy, as you know, but it's so much fun during spring training to see who's swinging it well and who's not. There, you got to really watch, and also the sample size. You know, for example, a guy like a Jerod Dyson might have 7 doubles in 41 plate appearances in spring training. And is that because he's flaring it to the exact right spot in left field? Or is that because he's hitting the ball hard? There are questions that have to be asked because of all these different variables. So that's our warning to you. Do you have anything to add to that, Clint?
I'd say there's one or two players on the team that you could really pay attention to their stats at all. That's Yordano Ventura, because he's actually pitching for something.
Sure.
If he's missing bats, if he's attacking the zone with his fastball, because we know that's his most important pitch. And yeah, he'll be getting in tune and finding his secondary stuff, but he's got to be able to throw strikes with his fastball and miss bats with it.
Yeah.
And that's something the other day he walked to in the inter-squad game. And obviously that's his first time on the hill. It doesn't really mean anything, but he's somebody you can pay attention to. Don't pay attention to his ERA. Look at just the peripherals. Is he missing bats? Or is he controlling walks? That's the biggest thing you can do. I mean, I've seen Mike Montgomery look like Cy Young one spring. And then he took it up to Kansas City and dominated their little inter-squad all-star game prior to the season. And then he did nothing on AAA. So that's all you can do, is just pay attention to. Act like you're a scout. If you're there, I go there to get entertained, for one. If you're at the games, if you're watching them on TV, then just enjoy it, because, you know, you don't always see depth of the outfielders, stuff like that, scouting terms. But if you're at the game, enjoy it, and you do want to do more than just enjoying baseball, then pay attention to the periphery of the game. You know, depths of outfielders, stuff like that. That might not be the depth. They're not going to use those same depths as they would in the regular season, but you can kind of see how they're scouting the teams.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, like I said, in the constant battle between stats and scouts, I think scouts win big time in spring training.
Oh, it's not even close. Yeah, it's not even close. It's an all scout game, and they will tell you there's a reason they're not going to be scouting Bruce Chinn. Bruce Chinn isn't that, if he pitched every day in surprise during the season, he would not be in the big leagues.
No, and I don't know. It's like I said before. I think it's one of those situations where they're doing the right thing. I don't necessarily agree with their reasoning, but they are doing the right thing with Bruce Chinn and saying that what he does in spring training isn't really all that important.
Yeah, he's a veteran. He's going to be working on getting his, you know, fastball where he wants it, or his secondary how he wants it. They take a pitch per like outing that they really want to work on, so it's not natural gameplay.
Yeah, and again, I want to stress the sample size real quick before we move on, just because if you look at like last year's spring training stats, for example, I think the leader in play in at bats, it was Alex Gordon, I want to say, with like 73, maybe Butler had a few more. Oh, you know, let's put it up. Frank Cor actually had 79. So that's not many at bats. That's 79 at bats is in the regular season, what, 20 games?
Not even. I mean,
not even. Yeah. I mean, and a lot can, games. Yeah, a lot can happen in 20 games, 18, 19, 20 games that is not indicative of an overall season. So the sample size, the thin air, the wind conditions, the players working on things, all that stuff tells me and should tell you that not all 400 batting averages are created equal in spring training.
Exactly. But let's take a break here, and then we'll catch you on the rebound.
Hello. Do you know us? We're a Major League Baseball podcast. But since our team hasn't won a pennant in nearly 30 years, nobody recognizes us, not even in our hometown. And that's why you should listen to the Pine Tar Podcast, because no matter how far out of first the Royals are, it's cool. You know, it'll keep you from getting shut out of your favorite hotels and restaurant-type places. So, if you're looking for some...
David, this is going to be a copyright infringement on Major League.
Well, just listen to the Pine Tar Podcast, then, starring Clint Scholes and David Leskie on Kansas City's Our City Radio.
And we're back! I love that SNL skit, Dave. But...
yes, I just snorted.
Get a little goofy on this week's podcast. This is what happens when we have nothing to talk about. But one good thing to talk about, Dave, is a piece that you wrote today, this being Tuesday, on lineup construction in the Royals and what your optimal lineup. So what were you thinking?
Well, I kind of tried to look at, you know, the book, quote unquote book, and put that all together with conventional lineups. So, I mean, realistically, Aoki probably fits best as the number three hitter in a lineup that goes completely by the book. But I think we all know that's never going to happen. So, I went and I looked at the Royals lineup, which I think we have a pretty good idea is going to be Aoki and Fonte Hosmer, Butler, Gordon, Perez, Moustakas, Kane, Escobar. And I made a point that if you look at plate appearances by batting order, by spot in the batting order from last season, the Royals, you lose between, I don't know, it was like 15 and 24. Four plate appearances for every spot drop. So, you know, 745 to 727 to 711 to 696 to 678, so on and so forth. So a guy dropping from first in the lineup to ninth would actually lose 143 plate appearances based on last season's numbers. And what kind of got me thinking about it was Alex Gordon hitting fifth, which I don't think is a very good idea because a guy like Omar Infante, who I like Infante, I don't like that he was signed for 4 years. We've talked about that more than enough. But I just don't think that he should be getting what amounts to 50 more plate appearances than Alex Gordon. And so I kind of tried to put it all together. And what I came up with was a lineup that goes, instead of what the Royals had, It goes Aoki, Gordon, Butler, Hosmer, and Perez, top five. And then, truthfully, 6 through 9 doesn't matter because none of those hitters are good enough to make a huge difference. But the nice thing about that is 6, 7, and 8, which is Kane, Moustakas, and Infante, can really go in any order you want. It can go with whoever's hottest. I feel like either Kane or Moustakas can actually carry an offense for a couple days, which I don't think you can say about Infante, and I definitely don't think you can say about Escobar. But that allows the bottom of the order to have a little bit more firepower as well, because like I said, I don't think Infante is bad. I just don't think he should be hitting second. I think he should probably have the 6th, 7th, 8th most at-bats in the lineup instead of the second most. So that's kind of what I came up with, and I think that, as I mentioned in the article, I think that could add 10 to 15 runs because the lineup's constructed just so much better. And people say, oh, well, 10 runs over the course of a season, that's not even a tenth of a run per game. But using the idea that 10 runs is a win, that win could be very important.
I totally agree. I think the lineup's going to morph during the season as it usually does.
Sure.
And if the Royals have the Omar Infante of 2013, then him in the 2 spot is fine.
Right, absolutely. I agree with that completely.
But if they have the 2012, 2011 Infante, then you're correct. They need to have him in the 8 hole. And that's why he's such an important player, and that's why you should hedge your bet at the start of the season and put Gordon in that 2 spot. He has a better track record of late, less, dip. But, and Infante is just so, his game is so batting average, appropriated. So what it'll be, Dayton Moore, he put it out there that, hey, this guy can be an on-base guy if he chooses. Well, I don't agree with that.
That's not how it works.
No, it doesn't work like that. But if Infante can hit like he did last year and have a high batting average in the, low 300s, then he'll have a 340, 350 on base, and he'll be fine in that spot.
Sure.
There's question marks, and the guy that we're going to be talking with next, Jeffrey Flanagan, he wrote about Alex Gordon, how big his season is coming up to this team if they want to be in the playoffs. Gordon's got to be a guy that carries this lineup. And I think they can't get around his power, and they really like his power, and they like the ability to put him in that 5 hole so he can drive in runs. But the key to that, and this has been Dayton Moore's crutch his whole GM career, and Ned Yost fills in it too, is you have to have players on base in front of those guys for them to drive in runs. And if Infante's on at a 310 clip, that's not good enough. And if Billy Butler's hitting right in front of him, he's not scoring from first.
Very true.
So Alex can't do damage if he doesn't have a guy on base and he's got a plotter in front of him.
Yeah, I think hitting 5th in the Royals lineup actually is the worst possible spot for Gordon. 5th in another lineup, it wouldn't necessarily be a problem, but in the Royals lineup, I just think it negates a lot of what Alex Gordon brings to the table.
For Gordon to have a big season, I mean, I think Dayton looks at it, RBI totals. For him to have a big season, Eric Hosmer is going to have a big season for Alex to turn it around, because he's going to need a guy on second. He's going to need a guy on third, obviously, to score. Well, Hosmer's going to have to be that guy, because more than likely, Aoki is scored by the time Alex is up to the plate.
Right. The odds of Aoki being on base when Gordon gets there, I mean, you can see a first and second with 2 outs and Gordon comes to the plate. But you're right. I think more often than not, Aoki will not be on base for Alex Gordon.
Yeah. So then he's totally dependent on Infante and Hosmer for him to earn, the precious Royals RBIs. I mean, I'm not concerned about RBIs, but that's what they want. That's what they've always talked about with Billy. And I think that's what they are thinking with Alex, is they're thinking about driving in runs.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And it wouldn't surprise me either with the Royals lineup, the one that they are going to put out, if Hosmer, even when he's been good, has gone through a couple dips here and there. And I could see him having a rough month and Gordon hitting third for a while with Hosmer hitting fifth.
Yeah. Hopefully that's not the case. We can't afford that dip this year.
No, absolutely not.
Hosmer's got to be the stud from day one at the start of the season.
Hosmer needs to be good enough to get MVP votes.
Exactly. I think you have to have multiple guys in this lineup. Hosmer's got to get MVP votes. Moustakas has to be an all-star candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Butler, Alex Gordon have to be what they've been in the past for this team to be serious about making the playoffs.
Yep.
So let's bring in Jeffrey Flanagan. We'll talk more about the Royals playoff ambitions with Jeff.
We are now joined by Jeffrey Flanagan from Fox Sports Kansas City. He covers all sorts of things beyond the Royals, but we're going to talk Royals today. We'll talk other things later. Jeffrey, how you doing, man?
I'm great. A little cold, but we'll get spring eventually.
Exactly. Well, I think we'll all be in Arizona at some point in the next few weeks, so we can look forward to that a little bit. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for talking a little Royals here in the cold weather.
Absolutely. Hope to enjoy it.
I think we will. Let's jump right in. One thing that I think a lot of people are curious about, and I've written about, you've written about, Quinn's written about, you mentioned the middle infield, backup middle infielder situation, and how the Royals may not start break camp with a backup middle infielder. Is that information that you have coming from the Royals, or is that speculation on your part?
No, that's information coming from the Royals, and it just piqued my curiosity because it's so unique. I can't remember a time where a Royals team would break camp without at least a bona fide backup middle infielder. But mm-hmm. when you break down the roster, and if they're going to carry five outfielders, and Dayton has told me several times that that's what they want to do, there really just isn't, the math doesn't add up to have a backup middle infielder when you're going to keep Valencia for sure. He's a lock. I mean, they invested a trade in him, and they like him as a backup to, in case Moose starts out slow. And they also like him as a better defensive option as a backup to Hosmer at first. There just really isn't any room for a backup middle infielder, especially when they're definitely going to carry 12 pitchers. So I just think that, to me, I got fascinated by that a couple months ago when Royals officials first started telling me that, and I'm still fascinated by it. And it can be done because of the amount of off days you have in April and May. I don't remember ever seeing that happen before.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird situation. Something that I had thought, based on your article that I think came out today, mentioning, Dayton Moore saying the rosters aren't frozen on opening day, is do you think that there might be a chance that the Royals would feel more confident sneaking a guy like Valencia through waivers after opening day in order to add that middle infielder because rosters are set?
Don't think that would happen. I think somebody would claim him. He's got value. I think they feel more confident they can sneak Siriaco through it. And look, I mean, come late April, early or mid May, something else may happen. I mean, they may be in a situation where they can trade one of the extra outfielders, not Dyson necessarily, but maybe a Maxwell or something like that, and then you can have your backup middle infielder. But early on, I don't see them sitting Escobar. I don't see them sitting Infante. I don't see them pinch hitting or pinch running for either one. Although, to be fair, I there are certainly situations, I think you would agree, that you would want to pinch hit for Escobar, although Ned's not ever been a fan of that. But so I think what you see on opening day, the nine guys that start are pretty much going to be in there the whole time, which is certainly a departure from the past. When you had, the Chris Getzes out there and stuff like that, you were always kind of juggling things late in the game. I don't think you'll see that. I think that the nine guys that start will be the nine guys that go pretty much the whole way.
So
if they're going to stick with nine guys and be pretty static, then I guess why keep Justin Maxwell on the roster when you have somebody like Escobar who might not have the bat again this year, and you're vulnerable to teams pitching around to get to Escobar?
Yeah, I think it comes down to the organization feels that they don't want to part with value, and they think there is value with Maxwell. They also feel that it's a lot harder to find right-handed power than it is left-handed power, which kind of works against Baguero. They're pretty convinced that they could not sneak Maxwell through waivers. And, you know, that's kind of why. And there's a slight feeling, too, that Escobar might bounce back to have the year he had in 2012. I'm not convinced. I'm probably sure that you guys aren't too convinced either. But that's kind of the thinking going in.
All right. Last question on the middle infield, because we'll move on from that. If Escobar were to get hurt in the second inning of a game, who plays shortstop without a backup middle infielder?
I think they'd go with Moose. Valencia could stand out there and probably not humiliate you, but I think, you know, Moose was a shortstop growing up. He does do a fair amount of middle infield work in practice and stuff like that. I think that'd be the guy. The more curious question is who would play second. that might even be even more amusing. I talked to Dayton a little bit today, and he thinks either one could, but they probably lean toward Valencia. So just an emergency situation, you get through a few innings, and then, of course, after the game, you make your roster move.
Sure, that makes sense. One thing you mentioned in an article recently was James Shields and how you think he's going to have a really big season. What about this year do you see as a reason why that could happen?
Well, I think he's going to be, if it's possible, he's going to be even more motivated. He's not a guy that is necessarily money-driven. I mean, he is a guy that wants to win as bad as anybody in the clubhouse. But I think he knows this could be his big, big, big contract. This is it. You know, this is going to be the one that sets him up. I mean, sure, he's already set up for life anyway, but this is the one that really sets him up. And I just kind of sense that and I don't think the Royals have any shot of re-signing him, to be honest. I hate to rain on any parades, but I just don't think that they're going to be in the market for what he's going to be getting. And I do think he's just going to have – it's going to be hard to top the year he had last year. I mean, I thought he was brilliant. I mean, I thought he was – especially down the stretch, he was as good as it gets. Everything is advertised. He was tough and got key outs. And I expect him to equal that or even be better. The rest of the staff, not so sure. To be honest, I have my concerns about the rest of the rotation.
With the obviously the confidence they have in Maxwell and now what they're talking about with Peguero, is there any chance Billy Butler comes back next year without just a monster season this year?
Tough question right now. I think they like Billy a lot, but they would certainly like to see him be more of the hitter he was in 2012 than last year. There was some disappointment, I'll say that, from the organization in terms of what Billy showed up doing in terms of his shape. They were a little bit concerned about that last year. And to be fair to Billy, the last 60 days of the year, he took off some weight and he worked out a little bit harder, ate a little bit better. And they would like to see that Billy Butler more often. But they're not as down on Billy as maybe some of the fans are or anything like that. They see him as a guy who maybe could retire as a Royal. To me, I think they see him as an Edgar Martinez type. Not as good, obviously, but maybe he could be. I mean, he's as good a hitter as they have. Let me put it that way. I mean, he is a smart hitter. He's as good hands as anybody on the team. So I think they haven't given up on him. I'll put it that way.
So do you think all the trade talk from early in the offseason was really them just doing their due diligence?
Yeah, they were not shopping him. I mean, there was never any of that. It's not like they can pick up the phone to the other 29 major league GMs and said, hey, what can I get for Billy? There was none of that going on. It was just, hey, they will listen to a good offer like any good GM would. If something came along, hey, they'd listen and possibly make a deal. But I don't think Billy's that easy to move either. I mean, he's, you know, how many teams, you're talking American League teams, and who doesn't have a DH right now, but that's to be so desperate to want Billy and give up a bunch of in return. I don't think there's that many teams. So I don't know how you guys feel about Billy. I think he's a very valuable resource in the middle of the order, and I expect him to bounce back and have a really good year.
Yeah, we are. We're definitely Billy fans over here. So
okay. I really don't think he's going anywhere. I just don't.
That's good to hear. Let's shift focus to the other side of the diamond. Well, not the other side of the diamond, but the other aspect, and talk about the pitching staff a little bit. You mentioned that you're not terribly comfortable with this pitching staff. How do you see the rotation shaking out? I guess the fifth starter is really the only rotation spot left up for grabs. Who do you think gets that?
I think the organization has wanted from the end of the year, from September on, they want Ventura. They want him to step forward and claim it. There's been a lot of posturing about Luke, and he'd be the only other real candidate. I think they'll be happy if Danny Duffy starts in Omaha and kind of refines his game a little bit more. They want to make sure that Luke didn't, I don't know how to put this right, that didn't figure out a bunch of stuff that could help him in the rotation and come back and be a first-round pick like he was. He's got the stuff, as you know. I mean, he can get guys out. But they just want to make sure that he just didn't find something, finally didn't click for him, that he could be a great starter. If that doesn't show up in the spring, then they're going to go with Ventura unless he just absolutely bombs. I think he will be the fifth guy. My concern is with the other three guys after that. I just don't know if you can repeat. And maybe this is having watched and covered Royals baseball for 25 years. I just don't know if you can repeat what they did last year in the rotation, where you lead the American League with whatever it was, a 3.45 ERA. I don't know how they did it, and I don't know how they can repeat it. And replacing Santana with Vargas is, to me, a little iffy. It's a little bit rolling the dice. Last year at this time, we didn't think Santana was necessarily that big of a signing, and it turned out fantastic. He had a great year. Maybe they get lucky again with Vargas. Maybe he finds it and turns it on here. But it just, like I said, it may be just be covering the Royals so long, you get so used to a bad rotation, and suddenly the team is first in the American League. You go, well, how are they going to repeat that? So let's hope they do.
One way they can repeat it is just with their great defense, and the team is probably the best defensive team in the American League. And I know you talked about how the Tigers could possibly be coming back to the division a little bit. What do you? How many wins do you think it takes to actually win this division?
I think it'll be right around 92, 94 again. And I kind of think too that the Indians will fall back a little bit. That was a really special year. And look, they've got a great manager, and he pushed all the right buttons last year. But I think they'll fall back a little bit. And I wrote that about the Tigers, and probably not completely 100% convinced about where I was writing. I mean, I just think that losing Jim Leland will have more of an effect than maybe we know. Prince obviously was a big bat that they lose. I think they'll lose the leadership of Omar Infante. Those guys, those things are hard to replace. Whether or not the Royals have closed the gap, that's, you know, another question. But they all have played the Tigers tough, and they match up with them well. I just think the Tigers right now have a superior rotation. Where they're weak probably is in the bullpen, where the Royals are strong. And that's where it became such a, you know, every game they played last year except one or two was really exciting. And I think we'll probably see that again this year. And if you're a Royals fan, you're hoping that the Royals have closed the gap offensively at least a little bit. They don't have as many holes in the batting order.
One thing you mentioned a few minutes ago was Duffy in AAA. And I know the Royals have said a couple times that they could see him going to the bullpen, but you don't think that's really a possibility?
I really don't. I don't think that suits him. He's not a you want a guy who has enough command to tighten it up for one or two hitters. He's a starter, and that's what he was born to do. And it doesn't say he's not going to be a starter this year. I really think he'll probably end up being that way. I think they're going to start out with Chen and see what happens there. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if Duffy is in the rotation by late May or June, and maybe Bruce Chen goes back to his the role he started out in last year. They have not quit on Danny Duffy. I just don't think the way the organization thinks right now, I don't think they think he can take that spot right now, since they've already committed to Bruce Chen. They really want Ventura to win that spot, and they don't want Danny just to sit in the bullpen. He's not necessarily a situational lefty yet. Maybe he could be down the road, but he's not there yet. So that spot for him probably is to get his innings in at Omaha.
All right. Well, I know I know you've got things to do, so we don't want to keep you forever. One more question, then we'll let you go.
Sure.
Your way too early win prediction. What do you have this year?
this is based on the fact that I think their batting order is way improved from last year. I don't think you're going to run into any dead spots until you get to Escobar, and I think that's really going to make a difference. And if they can just be slightly less of a rotation than they were last year, and I think their bullpen will be just as strong, especially if Luke is back in the bullpen and Aaron Crow bounces back and Herrera bounces back, I think they can. I'll go with 90. I really believe that.
Hey, from your mouth. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us. This was great. We'll have to do it again during the season.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
That was Jeffrey Flanagan from Fox Sports Kansas City. You can follow him on the Twitter, as an old boss of mine used to call it, at JFlanaganKC. Always interesting stuff from Jeffrey, because it comes from the Royals for the most part. So if you want to see what the Royals are thinking, what he's writing is often their thought process. One thing that stood out to me that he mentioned, you hit on this during the interview, is that he thinks the Royals starting nine is going to be the nine you see on the field for most of the time. And what's interesting about that is it kind of goes against their philosophy, or what they're looking at to doing as far as the bench is concerned, because they talk about wanting this strong bench with power, but they're not going to use it. So I don't really understand the point of Justin Maxwell on the roster, truthfully, over a middle infielder, considering the fact they're not going to use their bench.
No, I've been saying that for a month now. It just doesn't. If you got Danny Valencia on your bench, and you have, and you just look at the roster construction, you know, Valencia, he's going to pinch hit for left-handed hitters. Well, Aoki, he's not a guy he's going to pinch hit for. He's got, you know, so just basically he's Mike Moustakas. He's not going to pinch. I guess he could pinch hit for Eric Hosmer, but if Hosmer's having the type of season that you need Valencia to pinch hit for him, you're already up a creek without a paddle.
It doesn't really matter what they do at that point.
Yeah, so you're already up a creek without a paddle. So I just don't see the spots. And that's the other thing. I mean, Aoki, Gordon, those are outfielders that you would look to pinch hit, but they're also professional hitters. They've been in this league. You're not going to use matchup stuff with them. I guess you could pinch hit Maxwell for Gordon if Gordon's coming up against a guy that has just owned him in his career. But you're just...
They're never going to do that, though.
No, Ned's never done that. There's no precedent to that. Ned's just not that guy. He sticks with his team. We saw him stick with Escobar forever in his first year in Kansas City at times that were needed. And, you know, going back on it, Ned had the right approach with that, because then he turned around and he had a very good 2012. And a lot of that was probably the confidence they built from that 2011.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But, you know, he's not going to do... He just has no precedent of that. So then you're in a lot of trouble with, like we said with Jeff, if you get where Escobar's not hitting, you have nowhere to turn with him, and you can't pinch hit because you have no utility infielder. It just doesn't make sense. I like Justin Maxwell's power. He also obviously has big, big power. We saw that on that last home game of the season and that bomb he hit off Soria. And he's a guy that, but he's been in the big leagues. He's established. You know what he is. He's not a guy that's going to turn in all of a sudden into a long-term DH, I don't think. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Hey, let me ask you a question. If just your thought, if they were to get rid of Maxwell, try to sneak him through waivers, but they can't, and this is such a hypothetical, and Kane gets hurt, and then Dyson gets hurt, because both got hurt last year. Who do the Royals bring up? Is it Brett Eibner?
Jeez.
I know we've gone through three players. So
they'd probably bring up Peguero and play Aoki in center.
Yeah, but in my opinion, they're going to lose Peguero, I think.
You don't think he's going to get through? I think with his reputation and kind of attitude and what he pulled on Felix, his wife.
Yeah,
pulled,
that
I think,
could be.
I think there's a good chance they get him. That
it kind of depends on when they try to pass him through, because there could be a situation that injury. You know, team gets injured. It's injured in spring training and. Seem like the Marlins or
yeah, I think
the Astros.
I think he'll get through. If he doesn't, there's going to be a guy that they sign, I would think, that they store down in AAA just and say, hey, there's a good chance you're going to get up here if somebody gets injured.
Well, it's more than somebody. It's if three guys get injured.
Well,
but yeah. And
there's guys that are, you know, there's Willie Tavares. I don't know if he's still kicking around. Guys like that, they've got to do that. There's
sure.
Jason Bourgeois or what?
No!
You know, I mean, he killed it for the Rays last year.
Sure.
And down in their AAA team. So there's guys that you got to sign, and they're there just for that. And there's Brett Eibner. We'll see. Brett Eibner is a guy they could call up if his second half of last year is for real and he starts off in Omaha very well. That's a guy that could be the starting right field there next year if he has a good enough season.
He's very interesting to me. He can be the starting center fielder next year.
Yeah, and there's tons of tools there to work with. And something clicked late in the season last year. Now, was it luck that clicked in, or was it something that he changed? Greg and I interviewed him last offseason, and he was working with the Royals hitting instructors, and they made some modifications. Now, I don't know if that's what just finally clicked at the end of the season or not, but we'll see. He's got a chance to go to Omaha and play in a very, very friendly right-hand hitting park and do some damage and turn some eyes. And he will. He's a guy who, he's not on the 40-man, correct? And
right.
And so if he goes to Omaha, does very well, they're going to have to open up a spot for him.
And he might... What was that, Clint? Turn some eyes? Is that what you...
Turn some heads.
I like the turn some eyes phrase a little bit more, because I picture a player being so interesting and so good that you don't even have time to turn your head and your eyes just like roll around your
head. He's gonna have a chance to injure some kids into the in Centrist Fun Park in left field out there.
That sounds so violent. Clint.
No, but I thought that was interesting what Jeffrey said also. The other thing that I thought was pretty, I mean, it's mind-jarring to me, is Danny Duffy starting the season in Omaha. I never saw that as a possibility, to be honest with you. I thought Yordano was pretty much the lock to start in Omaha, and the way he tells it, it's completely the opposite.
Yeah, what surprised me wasn't so much that he thought Duffy could start in AAA, because I could see that. It was that he thinks it's Ventura and Hochaver. And that's it. For that number five spot.
Yeah, and that's fine with me. I mean, I guess I would prefer it was Ventura and Duffy.
Yeah, me too. But he makes a really good point that you never – I mean, look, we – I don't think anybody thinks Luke Hochaver is going to be a top of the rotation starter at this point. but you never know. And there's no reason not to give it a shot in spring training and see what he looks like on the mound. We talked about the stats, and don't worry about that. But if he looks really good, who knows? And the other thing that you could see with Hochaver is I'm not convinced they're not still shopping him. And if you can shop him as a potential starter and he has an outing where he throws five innings and gives up two hits and one run, strikes out eight and walks two, I think you could see him traded the very next day.
For him, the thing to watch is that velocity. Is he the guy that, you know, he used to throw 92, low 90s for the most part when he was starting. He was never a guy that was throwing high 80s, low, you know, 90, 91, but he was usually in that 92 to 93 range is kind of where he lived. Now, if he comes out and you get to that where he's pitching five innings and he's pumping 94, 95, now he could be a different pitcher.
Yeah.
And that's something to watch for him. And that's what I talked about. You and I talked about that on this podcast just a few episodes ago. And Luke's got stuff. Nobody will deny that. You and I won't deny it. We've seen him go out there and throw spectacular games. We've seen him go out in stretches where he no-hits teams for four innings and then gets bombed. There's something between the ears, but a little bit of that could be holding himself back, trying to be a starter who just holds himself back instead of just going all out. If Luke Hochaver can be a five- or six-inning guy who maxes out and then is done, but those five or six innings are really good, then he's got more upside than Bruce Chen does. He might have more upside than Danny Duffy or Yordano Ventura because they haven't proved that they could be five or six inning guys. We know Luke's body can put it out for five, six innings every start.
See, I think, to me, and this is just a hunch, I think that either Luke Hochaver is a reliever for the Royals or a starter with another team.
That wouldn't shock me at all. That wouldn't shock me at all. Unless the only way I could see that happening is if Yordano Ventura doesn't show them what they want to see.
Yeah, I guess that's true. If Hochaver looks great and Ventura does not, I could see him as the Royals number five starter. But I don't think that's much. I think we're talking less than 2%. I think they'd rather go Duffy than Hochaver personally.
Yeah, I agree. The name that I do like that we're not hearing any of is Wade Davis. He's not a starter in my book. I know there's...
Ryan, I don't know who you're talking about.
There's bloggers out there that think he can turn it around and be this. He's not that guy to me. I just see everything out of his hand looks average to me. I just don't see it. I don't. He looks like Kyle Davies out there.
I disagree. Davies flashed some plus stuff from time to time.
Oh, jeez. That's a bad indictment on Wade Davis.
The thing about Davis is you look at his peripherals and you think, well, he's had some bad luck. And then you see the batting average on balls in play and you're like, he definitely had some bad luck. And then you see that he gives up a 147% line drive rate and you realize, oh, he just throws it straight.
Yeah, that's the thing. He doesn't have bad luck. The stuff's average. And major league hitters can tee off on it.
Yeah, it's...
And yeah, he's had a couple starts that make you think, oh, but that's Kyle Davies all day long. These guys, I think you can put AAA pitchers out there that for one or two nights a year can look really good. And then for the rest of the nights, they will get bumped, they will get killed.
I'm pretty sure the 2000 Royals faced every single one of those AAA pitchers.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just how it is. These guys can look good on certain nights, and Wade Davis will look really good on certain nights. But more times than not, he's bad. And that 1.7 whip or whatever he was hovering around with for a while there, it's not good.
Here's what's crazy about Wade Davis. If you want an idea about how mediocre his stuff is, he had three starts last year where he got 10 or more swinging strikes. Three.
Jeez.
That's not very good.
No.
By comparison, hang on, this is riveting podcasting right now, I know, but if you hold with me, I'm gonna have something for you, and it's totally worth the wait. And if it's not, we'll give you your money back. By comparison, well, I thought I have something. I didn't. I thought Greg Holland would have a couple games with 10 or more, but his high was something like 8. But to be fair, he throws, you know, a fifth of the pitches.
Here's what – okay, here's – if you like advanced statistics, and a lot of the guys listening do, I love it. Usually there's a pitch out of every pitcher's hand that's average or above. They've got a pitch. It's Chris Dwyer has a curveball. It's, you know – Kelvin Herrera has an ungodly changeup. Kelvin, you know, Greg Holland's slider. Wade Davis, go to pitch value on Fangraphs. Every pitch is significantly below value. It's negative value. I mean, last year.
And he's the key to the trade.
Yeah, and he's the key to the trade. I mean, 2011, it was pretty much the same, except his fastball had a tick up. 2010, his fastball had to take up everything else. Significant below value. It's always been that way. It's not going to change. And then last year, the fastball took a real dip in value. So he's a fastball primary pitcher, and that's his key pitch. And when he's starting and losing velocity on it, then he's a nightmare out there.
Yep. And these are a nightmare for another season.
Mm-hmm. Probably the last one, though, in a Royals uniform.
I can't imagine them picking up a $7 million option on a reliever.
No.
Who's not a closer.
Yeah. I can't either. So. That's about it, Dave. Don't you think?
I think it's amazing that we found an hour's worth of things to talk about this week.
Yeah, and none of them include Nelson Cruz.
Or Irvin Santana. That right there was the first time the name Irvin Santana was mentioned, and it's the last time in this podcast.
Yeah, we no more Irvin Santana. We are an Irvin.
I said it was the last time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No J. Alou client. There will be no more J. Alou client talk the rest of this offseason until he signs.
Can we guarantee that? You know what? Once again, we'll give you your money back.
Yeah, we'll give you your money back on this podcast. So, all right. Well, that wraps up another fantastic episode. I'm Clint. You're David. Good night.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.